Yeah,
you
and
know.
that's a great way of describing it.
Listen up, Umi. This is a podcast with the most ducker. This is Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, BLL by the Lost Halls podcast. I'm joined by Tanya Gates.
Hi, everybody.
Red Powell and Adam Camilleri.
Hey.
Evening.
How's everybody doing? We got some controversial things to talk about on this show. We're going to talk about WinPath and tournaments and manipulation and submarining and all those interesting things that have crept up as a point of conversation on the internet today.
About to get spicy.
And people are going to feel different. They're going to get this. People are going to feel ways about this, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I want us to have as open conversation as we possibly can, with the idea that hey, people are showing up to these things to play within constructs to have whatever outcome they want from them.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to have these conversations, and I'm loving that Paul and the rest of the team are willing to take this on, willing to talk about it, because I don't know. I feel like FTN is such an engine for good, and can be such a platform to talk about some of the ickier or some of the more nuanced issues that are going on in the community, and we don't want to run away from it. But at the same time, we're not here to throw away our names or bad bash anybody or say right or wrong or whatnot. We're pretty much just going to try and focus on where do we want to be and how do we grow from this? Because I feel like this is we've had a bunch of these. Like I was on Charity Hammer last weekend, and I felt like the community's ability to put on a big charity extravaganza like that, and same with the Nova Open Charitable Foundation that Paul and I have been involved in for a couple of years, that shows a level of maturity in our community and the things we're able to come together and produce and, you know, be greater than the sum of our individual selves.
Hey, you opened the door for me. I want to talk about the Nova Open Charitable Foundation. Tickets are up for grabs right now. That is coming up towards the end of the month. We're going to close it out with a live show like we have been. Well, we're going to jam 40K, talk to artists, showcase some things, talk about the charities and that kind of stuff in a live stream for the Nova Open Charitable Foundation. I'll get you the dates and times as we get there, but the raffles are live right now. Go and see those amazing things. Okay. Back to the
and yeah, I feel like this is a point of maturity. This is a point of maturity for the community, and a space where we can, you know, step into where we want to be, rather than where we were. So I'm happy we're having this conversation. It could be a little bit of a debate. We'll see. Apparently, Red's got some weapons lined up for me.
I know you mentioned it. We're not going to talk about the specific events. We're not going to talk about specific people because that is almost irrelevant. This type of thing happens or can happen, and we're going to talk about if it should, when it's okay, what degree in which it might be okay, when it's not okay, and, you know, when maybe somebody crosses the line, or when you are potentially, the overall effect could be damaging to your community.
Yeah, exactly. Now that's I love that you're talking about as in like damaging to the community, or because that's upon the clause upon which the people are finding this unacceptable. Picks of it, bringing the game into disrepute or playing in a manner unbecoming of, you know, whatever we want to be. And so, I mean, of the first and foremost there, that's an acknowledgement that submarining, there's no rule against it. There is no overt saying, you know, you did not score all the available points that you could, bad boy, you know, or girl, you know.
Let's break down.
But maybe we need to define some things.
Yeah,
exactly.
Defining submarine is, so there's two ways. Sometimes we use it ironically. Oh, you took that L in round one? Yeah, submarine plan engaged. You really you just lost the game.
Womp womp.
But what the tactic really means is that you're going under the water. In wind path pairing, the winners play each other all the way as you get towards the top. But what you're doing is you are potentially artificially through mechanics of the game, not just not reporting the right score, you are not scoring as many points as you possibly could in order to give yourself an easier game in the next round of the tournament.
Red, is that your how you define it as well? Because for my mind, yeah, it's choosing not to, in where it breaks down for us is just choosing not to score points in the hope of getting further into the tournament before you take a loss.
So I'm not
what I'm about to say, I'm not saying I agree or disagree, but I think it's important to talk about this. ITC code of conduct under the term of angle shooting. What do you think angle shooting is?
I haven't read the definition. For my mind, it's taking advantage of a disproportionate advantage to their inexperience, and they're leveraging that in order to, you know, win a game or gain advantage. So that would be, gentleman's at his first couple of events, doesn't really know how stratagems works, and so, you know, you set them up like horrifically for a gotcha that they didn't know was coming, and, you know, give him a bad time.
Okay, so and I don't think that that is a wrong instance, but I think the ITC definition of essentially using a technicality within the game to create an instance that could be interpreted as against the spirit of the game or is not sportsmanlike.
I like the term "not sportsmanlike" was added there because I feel like that's what we're getting to. We really want to discuss how we want to conduct ourselves and what are we willing to accept and not accept on the table and conduct wise. Yeah,
right. And so I think where this goes, and again, I'm not agreeing or disagreeing because I don't ultimately have to in a lot of cases. I think in a lot of cases it is absolutely between the players and the TO. Right. I think that the ITC has moved in a direction where they are trying to enable or empower TOs to sort of seek out unsportsmanlike activity that is occurring and address with it before it creates a bad environment or bad game for the players, for the community.
Yeah, or alters the culture of that they wish to promote, yeah.
Right.
Back
exactly.
To that episode we're gonna do one day about culture constructing at your event.
Yeah,
Brewing it.
Yeah, it's coming. And so I think that that's the important part, right? Like I could go more into my opinion, but I think that that will play itself out as our conversation continues.
Yeah, like sort of playing on like the technicality aspect of it. It's like I see it, like I've had it happen to me because I'm a newer player, but I used to word questions like, hey, how far does your model move, right? And they just tell you the stat, right? But then like, you know, there's stats, there's abilities, there's like all sorts of things that can modify that. And sometimes not being overly forthright about it is, I consider that sort of angle shooting. And it's not against the rules, like they didn't lie or anything like that. But now it just means that I have to be a little bit more careful how I word the questions.
Yeah, rather than the burden being on them to disclose things openly and honestly, the burden is now all of a sudden on you, the newer player, to ask questions at the perfect time, which, yeah, isn't what we want.
That's right. But that's how it is.
Yeah,
right.
That's a great example, I think.
Yeah, but honestly, like, I feel like I'm so young. I'm so like new in the hobby that I don't know all of the instances of angle shooting. Like, that's just the one that I have personally come across.
Well, we pretty much gave three different definitions just then. Like, I talked it as in like a gotcha. You talked it as in like a kind of manipulation of information, and then the definition was somewhere between all those things plus many more. Yeah.
Right. Yes, and the definition is very much open. In order to, again, enable, there is something to it, right? There is some aspect of how it's done, and it is not a cookie cutter thing that just, you know, you can apply in an easy fashion. You absolutely have to take the situation, you know, go from event to event. You can't just say, well, here's all the things that we've bracketed into this, because you could arguably have, I think, you know, what some part of the community might consider unsportsmanlike versus the other. There are obviously some cases where court of public opinion has ruled well, as in like ruled overall. But there are also cases where there are quite clearly communities that are okay with certain aspects, where if you did that same thing somewhere else, it would be considered unsportsmanlike. And so I think that that's important to consider as well.
So this has caused me a bit of introspection in myself, because I have submarined before, knowingly and
sure.
And planned to submarine, and I've actually got a couple of different examples, guys. And so I'm definitely somebody who needs to reflect upon how I want to conduct myself. I can tell you right now, there's been certain times in the game, and this is the best example, and of course the example that makes me feel best about it, because I feel like this is the easiest one to justify.
That's the slippery slope. I mean, that's
exactly that's what we're getting, isn't it? what can you justify? Should any of it? Should you try and justify any of it, or should we just blanket say, hey, this is unacceptable and needs to change? So the example I've got is when Iron Hands was the thing, the big baddie, and they were 30-35% of the meta. They were 50% of the meta in some events. I'd be going to events in Australia, and I was under a lot of pressure at the time to perform to a certain level, but I wasn't willing to play Iron Hands. I was actually playing Deathwatch at the time. But I knew Deathwatch was a very good army at getting wins, not getting huge wins, and I chose to play them because of that. But Iron Hands were just getting big wins. They were just nonstop getting huge wins. And so I would make sure that I didn't get a huge win rounds 1, 2, and 3 in the hopes that all the Iron Hand players would play each other for the first couple of rounds, knock each other out, and then hopefully I would only have to play one or two of them in theory to win the event, rather than having to play three or four of them. And then
continuous path of Iron Hands.
Exactly. Because in that meta, if you do well, all you get rewarded with is worse matchups.
Yeah.
The better you do, the harder things get. And so the idea was, hey, get a win, get a medium win. If possible. I wasn't walking in being like, I'm going to brutalize somebody and run off objectives and things like that, which is the example we've been given in the community. It was like, okay, when I've got the game in a state in which I think I'm going to win, we've been through turn 4, turn 5. I don't need to score any more points than this, and this wasn't saying I was going to score 30, 40 points or with a win. This is talking about 50, 60, 70 points if we're talking about 9th edition metrics, rather than getting 90s and 100s. And just manage my score in such a way that I would not have to get knocked out automatically by Iron Hands next round. And to my mind, I justified that by saying I was going to enjoy the event more as well, because Iron Hands were not fun to play.
Winning super fun. Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. Winning super fun, but also having a competitive game super fun. I'm much more the right.
No, I'm kidding. I'm being somewhat facetious here, just to kind of point.
And of course. And so the justification was, I'm going to enjoy my event more, the event I'm attended to and I've paid money for, if I don't get just auto clubbed by going second against Iron Hands next round. Was justification. Hey, if I, instead of winning by 50 points, and some of these games, I'm definitely saying, I didn't have a choice. I did the best I could and I got the result I could. And there wasn't any manipulation involved because I didn't have the opportunity because my opponents, played in such a manner as well. And sometimes that worked. Then the last time I did it, it didn't work. I walked too close to the line. I lost the game because I tried to walk too close to the line. I felt like a fool and I've never done it again. And so that's the tightrope you've got to walk on these things.
I don't want to derail the conversation, but I think it's risky. It's very risky, but it's still it's a gameable system.
And yeah, there was no rule at the time then that was, mid 8th edition, so towards the end of 8th edition, there was certainly no discussion about anything I was doing as being unethical, which shows me and tells me that the scene's maturing, which I like, the fact that we're having these ethical conversations. But by all means, chime in. What do you guys think about my actions then? And please judge away.
This is tough because I think that working the tournament to try to get the long-term victory is, I think it's kind of okay as long as you're not doing it at the expense, either you're the enjoyment of the game with your opponent to degrading of the overall, the community. You're not causing ill will to the other players or other people that would somehow impact their desire to come back to the next tournament. Where's the fault, if there is a fault? And then how many contributing factors share in that fault, if there is a fault?
That's fair. So you're saying, where's the line? Where's the acceptable, not acceptable line? Because even upon reflection, I have no problem with my actions then. I say, oh, cool, you were just trying to enjoy for what you understood about the game then and the field that was available to you. You just tried to do the best you could.
You're
with
trying
what you
to
had
win. Out. You have
yeah,
a path.
I was trying to win by the only path that I thought was reasonable for me to go upon. The other argument is, just take a better army at him. Don't be scared and go through all the best players.
It's not quite that simple though, because when there's a lot of things that lead us to the tournament table. There's of course what we want to do, how we want to spend our weekend, what we want to play. Now look, I don't want to be coming off is like on a pedestal. I took Iron Hands during that period of time. Okay.
Yep.
But what I'm saying is there's lots of different things that lead people to that table. And we're all, sometimes we're there for what could be different reasons.
That's true. Now I'm sure there's other examples. And I think the reason that, I don't want to be disparaging towards any party, but the reason that this has come up is because this was such an extreme example of this. This was a gentleman who was, I suppose, by submarining was harming their opponent's enjoyment of the game.
Yeah, because it was very blatant and intentional. And yeah, now, yeah, exactly. So I'm not saying that you should hide it better and that makes it okay. I really want to talk about what is okay. What do we think?
Yeah, well, I was about to say I'm grateful. Acceptable. I'm grateful that this gentleman chose to do it openly, honestly, and with full knowledge of, full knowledge of the community. In fact, he told the TO what his intentions were and how he intended to conduct himself. And it's only because he chose to do that we're able to have this conversation as a community. So, in some terms, I'm grateful for his actions, and at least I applaud him for the honesty.
Our whole goal of even discussing this is about that evolution and maturity as a group. And while there may be some kind of feel bad experiences around this, is that justified? Is it just part of it? Is it, if we were to patch that, does that create another problem that's worse? I mean, I don't know. Just saying, is it even something to worry about fixing?
It's tough, right? Like there's a lot going on.
It is tough, but I mean, as somebody who's a new player and a developing player, but yet not completely oblivious, and I would be able to see what he was doing, I would feel like I don't belong at that tournament, that I am a nuisance and just a stepping stone, somebody to be manipulated to get exactly where the player across from me at the table wants to go. That's how I would feel.
And that's what we want to avoid, isn't it? That's exactly the issue, I suppose, we're going for. So we're going into this against. Look, I don't have an incredible array of answers. I know Red's got a bunch. I'm in this really weird conundrum, yeah? Where I think if you have the skill and ability to do what this player was doing, good for you. You're in a system that allows you to do that and rewards you from doing that. So why shouldn't you? And that leads us to a bunch of different questionable end games. Because that first thought that is like, hey, wow, that shows some real mastery of the game, that you can manipulate your score in such a manner that you can set up to, get yourself in a better position for the future, blah, 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 blah. Good for you. A game is going to game. But yeah, the end result of that is that we start to have this divide of being like, is this what we want the scene to be? Do we want the scene to be divided between players who can and cannot? Do we want people to feel disenfranchised or unwelcome to attend events because they don't feel like they have an opportunity? And no, it's not. It's absolutely not. In fact, I find that thought 10 times worse than any thought of, pat on the back, you did well for, submarining.
Probably everyone on this show and probably a lot of listeners, we've all been that person that's lost to the person that's gone all the way and won the tournament.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's true.
I mean, so this is, I don't want to make this conversation be about like sour grapes of somebody won and somebody lost. It's about how they did it. We're talking about how it happens, not the fact that it happens.
So I've got an example that I know Red's got a rebuke for, and so I want to line him up for this one and get him loaded, locked and loaded.
And it's a good one too. But let me, if I can, ask a couple questions before we get to that one, because I think that this sets some pretty good perspective too. I think that there is a ton of good reflection to come out of this. And so let's say if the person in question of this entire scenario, instead of doing, okay, so one, instead of communicating their intent up front, let's say that they, instead of, because the scenario here is essentially playing against someone on a table, you wipe them from the table and then you just don't take objectives to max score things. You just play it out. Okay, well, I'm only going to get this many points, because you understand that that's how you can submarine effectively doing that, right? Mm.
You just need a win. You need one more point than the other guy.
Right, right. And so, you craft that scenario. So what if, and I'm not saying that it's as likely, because it's much easier once you've removed the player from the table to do these things, right? But if, let's say, in a hypothetical situation, they, instead of doing that they actually just play the game, even though they know they're winning to whatever extent, like they were going to do what they're going to do more or less, but they just do it on the front end, right? So they keep you on the table where you can't do much or enough to effectively do anything to them, right? So like, just as an example, Tanya, you're talking about how demoralizing it would be if someone did that to you to a certain extent, because they're just using you to one way. But if instead, and I'm there's a second phase to this, if they're playing against you, Tanya, and it's you and me playing, and I take out most of your guard to the extent that you've like I can do whatever I want, right? This is just a hypothetical scenario that I've taken out most of your guard. I've got corn berserkers or whatever, and I'm going to be able to hold whatever I want, but I've essentially pushed you into a corner where you can't do anything. And then for the next six rounds of the game or whatever, three, four, five, whatever, I just prevent you from doing anything, but I don't actively seek the objectives myself. Effectively accomplishing the exact same thing, just with more engagement. Does that make it sound better or more okay? That's my question. I know that was very drawn out.
To me, it's exactly the same.
Okay, good.
It's exactly the same, yeah.
What about you, Adam? What do you think?
So the example you just gave is the one that I did. I mean, not to that extent. Like you get to a crux point of the game you play your off or whatever, play in whatever manner you got to do to get the game into a winning position, and then just maintain that position to the end. When you could have forced the issue, tabled them, taken away all their points, especially something you're not incentivized to do in any way, by the way. As long as I get, like what Paul just said, as long as I get one more point than you, I don't care if it's 99 to 100. Does not matter. Or it's one point to 2 points. Doesn't matter. There's, sure. That's the thing we're going to talk about later. Because I'm not disincentivized to allow you scoring points as long as I'm going to score more. And so when you get to that point where, and this is the way that, I would submarine, you get to that crux point where the game is going to go your way and it's easily to maintain it going your way, you then therefore there's no more incentive to harm your opponent's enjoyment of the game, allow them to play whatever metrics they have or whatever resources remain to them, and then you just do the same.
Fighting their fights.
Yeah exactly. I'm just going to sit on these three objectives to your two objectives. That means I'm going to win by about 10 to 15 points. You can try and push me off them, but I've got 10 Deathwing Terminators on this one, and I've got every buff imaginable, and you have to go through them to get the other two, so pretty much I can just stay here and win.
Okay.
And Dark Angels is a good example of that, because that's exactly how Dark Angels play. Not that I've done that with Dark Angels, by the way. I've stopped submarining since 8th edition.
Look, we're not to the point where submarining is bad. You can admit it.
Yeah. Well, I am.
I
don't think I've played enough games of 9th edition to get good enough to submarine in this edition yet. So, I haven't had the opportunities.
So, let me push it to phase two of this question. So, if I do all that, and, Tanya, you said there's no difference and Adam, you've said this is really like the, it's more or less you've done this and Dark Angels do this to a certain extent. If I make the game engaging in such a way that while I'm doing it, let's say Tanya, for every whatever, I'm still, let's say I do exactly that, but I make the game something that where you're having fun. So like one of my favorite people, Horton, who also plays Korn, who I've had such a wonderful time playing with. He has a thing where like you're playing, if he kills something, he gives you like candy. If you kill something, he gives you candy. Essentially every action ends with him giving you some kind of like concession prize. That's
dog stuff right there.
Well, but it's how he like tries to make it a good time for both people, regardless of if he's losing or winning or whatever. So if there's a way that they can make it, that the player can make it enjoyable for both people, but that's still accomplished, the exact same thing that we've been talking about is done just on the front end instead of the back end, like the real world scenario we have. Does that make it more okay if you're having a good time, although they're still doing that to you?
So I think it makes it less unethical. I think because you're not damaging, you're trying, at least you're trying to not damage your opponent's enjoyment of the game. But I think it's still the same thing. Like, are you saying that, might not be your first degree crime, it's second degree crime now?
I mean, that's kind of what I'm asking.
I actually think it's probably the same.
Okay.
But I have a couple questions.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Why is nobody, like, if you know that the person that you're going up against, or you have suspicions that the person that you're going up against next is newer or maybe not as skilled as you, and you felt that you could be honest with the TO about what you were going to do, why couldn't you have that conversation before you started the game? You go to your opponent and be like, look, this is the situation in the current meta, and this is how I feel, and I want us to play really hard until it's quite clear that one of us is going to come out on top.
Sure.
That's a different situation. That's collusion.
But you're playing so hard until you absolutely know that there's nothing the other person can do.
It would still be considered collusion, because then you're having a discussion about what the outcome of the game could be or should be, and not letting things naturally take its course.
But it's not going to naturally take its course because this person's going to pull their punches. It's like they don't care about the social contract. And the social contract at a tournament is great because you know everybody there, in theory, is going to give you their best.
I think you're right. I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. I just say that on the other side of that is once you start to have a dialogue about what the outcome of the game could be, then you are creating an unfair scenario for the table next to you.
Okay, so then is it not collusion with the TO if you told the TO that you were going to do this?
It is less collusion. I don't... It's less collusion, if that's even such a thing, because once you are still moving your pieces, you are essentially moving unhindered by your opponent because your opponent can't do anything to you, but you're still doing something that is a physical action and not dependent upon this just kind of understanding, other than the understanding of letting the time run out in the round or finishing out the rounds of the game or whatever.
I don't see it as any different. If you play your hardest, you play you both play your hardest until the other person can't do anything else. I just don't really see the difference.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to hash out, I think, or at least come to some consensus on.
And then the other part of the discussion, you were talking about like giving out candy or whatever to like somehow lessen the blow. But like a number of top players, even at tournaments, when they get matched up against somebody who's developing or new or whatever, they still take that as a teaching moment. And that to me is a lot better than walking off objectives or anything like that. Like if you are that skilled that you know you're going to win the game before you even get in there, and you know you're going to walk off objectives, and you know that you could do whatever you want, you can absolutely also teach that person how to be a better player. That's your level, and I think that's almost your responsibility.
It's a fair point too.
I do quite like that line.
I think responsibility.
Responsibility we have to each other, responsibility we have to the community. Yeah, I think that's a great line.
Before we actually, Adam, I think that's a perfect stepping off point to the example you want to bring in.
Beautiful. All right. I love to try and get a cheeky little historical example in every episode, mostly because it activates Red in amazing ways. Okay. In the tales of historical battles, historical wars, there is always this thing called positioning. You'd never want to be the one who's charging up the hill into the archers, into the spearmen and whatnot. You want to be the one charging down the hill. You want to be the one with the flanking maneuver opportunities.
High ground is always better. We know this.
Yeah.
Said so.
Kenobi, you know? Yeah. Kenobi taught us that. Even though he tricked
them in trying to get the high ground so he could cut to the half.
And he was ready. Yeah. Never mind.
It's the long game.
So the example I have is that this gentleman who was performing this, he did so with the foreknowledge of the lists he was likely to face towards the end of the event because he knew what the meta of the event was and who the other strong players were. And he was of the opinion that these players had taken lists that counted his, and they had a better opportunity. He had a better opportunity to beat them if he played them on certain missions. And of course, this was done with foresight of the players in attendance, the list they were taking, and the missions that would be played at the event. Also the terrain, which can't be overstated either. So this huge amount of foresight, e.g. he knew what the lay of the land was. He knew the likely battlefields he would engage upon these people with, and he wanted to manipulate the state of play to such an extent that he could play them from an advantageous position. We have seen generals fight wars at nauseam and be decided by positioning. Napoleon was a great one for it. But the example I have is Caesar versus Pompey. Now, I learned about this initially from the series Rome, because I went, after I heard about the battles, watching the series, I went and researched the battles because I wanted to know what actually happened. Because how the hell did Pompey lose when he had like Caesar cornered and starving and like a 2-1 advantage in men? And essentially what would happen in those battles was that, you know, like 5 days a week, you'd get your men out into battle ready formations, and you'd position yourselves, array yourselves for battle. And then you stand around for 6-8 hours or whatever in the heat, and then you pack up and do it again tomorrow until such a time as one of you couldn't, had to commit to the battle. And so you'd have this constant positioning and repositioning of forces, everyone trying to gain a positional advantage by geography or by, politics back home or supply train or logistics, all these things. When Napoleon comes in, Napoleon was the king of logistics in a lot of ways, army moves on its belly. But this is where it comes in, because technically that's what I feel like this guy was doing. This guy was setting himself up for the advantage of positioning and essentially of the battlefield of his choosing, because he wanted to play these guys upon his terms, not upon his opponents. And he was working within the constructs given to him to do that. And now we're at a point where we're saying, hey, Adam, this isn't a reenactment of a battle. This isn't a reenactment of the Civil War, you know, where things are already been in place. This is, like Tanya said, this is a social contract between two competitors trying to meet their own goals and their own expectations. And at some point, there is an absolute line between that, because there's two separate things there. The social contract that says, hey, I'm going to do my best on this table in order to reach my goals, and so are you. And while we're doing that, we should take every effort to make sure we're both enjoying this experience. Every effort should be made to maintain the enjoyment of the experience, mm-hmm. regardless of what our end goals are, regardless of where we're trying to get. So yeah, that's my example, and that's my spiel. Mm. Time to hit me, Red.
No, you really, Tanya, sprung the trap on you before you even got to the example. I think that the social contract deal, really the separation between the real world history example of warfare, where warfare, arguably the greatest game that consumes all things player, pieces, dice, money, everything in it. Unfortunately, it is the greatest wagers are made in such cases. You talk about Caesar and Pompey Magnus, and I mean, he absolutely had it. It was a mind game that Caesar was able to even pull it off, and the maneuvering, right? That's what it was, this positioning. It was a position of maneuver. Okay, if I get here and I'm positioned in this way, I can do this much damage to you in such a state that you will never recover. And essentially people would believe that it was predictive, right, by how they were positioned. And so if we engaged in such a way, I would lose so much to the extent that I would never be able to recover, or you would have such sway or influence over me. And the reality is that as amazing and remarkable as those endeavors are, the game that we're playing, while the war game is an aspect of it, the game is only just an aspect. And the social engagement really is far more, I think, key and pivotal. And I think that there's some people, you know, you talk about it. Okay, here some people go into it and they disagree with us. They absolutely disagree with us when it comes to the competitive aspect. No, I did not go into this with a social contract. I did not go into this with the expectation that you had to, I have to cater to you to enjoy this game.
There's a finite amount of fun at the table, and you're going to have it.
Yeah. Well, and that's the unfortunate part of it is that, you asked my opinion at the beginning, is that my opinion is that, yes, I totally agree with what you said, Tanya, and that I do think that you go into it is a multiplayer game, and it is not just for my sole benefit, but our collective benefit that we play this game. There is a lot to enjoy through it. There's some people will win, some people lose. It's a dice game. It's not a matrix game in such a way that it is foretold in all cases. It is statistically possible for someone to just roll ones all games. Is it likely? No, it's not. Oh, but
man, you need to watch more of my games. It's very likely.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And so, like, it's just not, it's, this is not, I don't recommend to anyone who thinks that they don't owe anybody anything going into a game. I'm sorry, I don't recommend going to large events then, because it is very much a community event. It is not a singular entity event. And if someone does think that and they still go into it, like, I'd be more happy to buy you a drink and socialize with you in that case than play a game with you, because I think that there's other things to get out of it. And that's just the reality of this aspect. We're not going into this wagering each other's lives over it. And so there's no need to treat each other like Pompey and Magnus did. The supremacy and rulership of Rome is not at stake, along with our families and everybody else that puts their names behind our banner. Like, that's not something that we need to be concerned about. Reality is that we need to be more concerned about the welfare of one another. And are we all enjoying ourselves as we continue to want to play these games together with each other? In my opinion, I know that that becomes esoteric and steps beyond just our game of toy soldiers, but I really do think that that's the key aspect to this.
Well,
and one of the things I enjoy the most.
Yeah, well, that's you're stating it, but that's the way you feel. I mean, I know that. I also know that's how you do it, but you know, other people feel differently. They feel like the stakes are higher, and that does. But I think it's easy to dismiss things by saying that. I think that anyone can find, if you look hard enough, or you want to find some type of justification for anything.
Yep. No, I mean, I don't disagree. I think that there's definitely. And that's what I was talking about before, different environments, different communities. There are communities that are absolutely bent, unfortunately, has a bad connotation to it. They are very focused and emphatic on the, I mean, Adam, you know, you said, we talked about this. As soon as this event began to arise, we were actually talking about this. And you mentioned how, you know, your community, that it is an acceptable thing to submarine in some cases. It is an acceptable thing to manage it. And I honestly think that there is an environment for that to a certain extent, but it does take community buy-in for the group to be okay with that. If they are okay with that and they find that as something that is an acceptable method to manage an event to get through it, then that's something else entirely. And it's also goes into communicating, making sure if there's new people that they understand that that's a method and technique. I mean, when you go into other sports and other events, an example, race car methods, right? So how do race car tracks, and how do they method through their laps and how they're going to get there? Like, not all of them just get up front and run it out, right? Horse racing is not on just a matter of, okay, get up front, go as hard as you can and win it. You have to pace yourselves certain ways. Mm-hmm. And so there is a whole other methodology, I think, behind this, where In a lot of cases, we are looking at ourselves and the broader events, but I do think there are appropriate communities and appropriate environments where this is not as unacceptable as we're kind of pushing it to certain degrees, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I agree that in the – like, I think we should almost start getting to a point of distinction now, because I do love the term event. Like, you are going to a Warhammer or a 40K event, and then there's the tournament. And I think at a tournament, stuff like this should be acceptable, like, or not, if not acceptable in this iteration, because this was a very extreme case that was brought to light, at least not discouraged, you know, because
recognized as part of the event. I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, part of the metagame. And this is something I talk about with people a lot, especially with some new players, because there's a lot of different levels of playing a competitive tournament. There is playing for the terrain and the tables. There's metering for that. There's metering for the field, as in the armies and the factions you expect to see. And then there's metering for the caliber of the event. There's metering for the other players there. And these are all different levels upon which you can operate at, if you can reach that level, if you want to, if you have that drive or that. But so this gentleman was playing at a level where he was metering for the event. He was metering for the other players there. He wasn't so much metering for factions. He was metering for the fact that good players were playing lists that could beat him. So he's taking all the things into account and found his win path through metering at that level. Now, I think they were almost coming to a crux point, because this the gentleman we're talking about in particular is about as close as you can be to a professional player without you know being assigned Pepsi on his shoulder professional player. You know what I mean? But I think there should be a realm where what he did is justified. I do not like what he did in the context of where it occurred, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Yeah.
Joke about the Olympics, yeah? And
I want to do a correlation of to speed walking.
This game, this is
perfect.
I actually don't want to do a correlation of speed walking. I just happen to know a lot more about speed walking than I did 2 weeks ago.
Fair. Sounds like someone else had a rabbit hole they went down this week. But yeah, when you got it, the Olympics was just on, yeah?
Yeah.
I wasn't in the Olympics. Just putting it out there, guys. Shock and horror. I wasn't in the Olympics. And so when but I could, you know, technically I could go to a tennis court where there is a professional player there, challenge them to a game and get handed to me. It could happen. Very well could happen. At the same time, Olympics isn't professional. I could go to a world-class caliber, you know, person and get absolutely smoked. And that's what's happening on some of these tables. The difference in what this player was able to do and able to manipulate shows a disparity to such an extent that this guy should be almost operating his own pool or gearing down when he operates in this player pool for the enjoyment of others. And I think that's almost where we're at with this discussion, yeah?
I mean, I don't know. I think that the situation – I mean, let me speak aggressively.
Let the man speak.
Oh, no.
You try doing that submarine stuff around me, you ain't winning the tournament, because I'm telling you. Well, I'm swinging for the fences every time, and there's tons of people just like me. It's like the situation in which that occurs and where it will be fruitful is so remote.
Mm-hmm. That's what happened to me, dude. I tried to walk that line. I tried to be a big brain, clever boy, and it backfired.
Yeah, so it seems like there's just so much downside, such as being a fun sponge for people, and it rarely ever working out for you. I don't want to like derail. Like, yeah, I think that you're right. I think we're talking about different types of events, and people should know. That's it. Well, you know, in this culture crafting episode that I promise will exist eventually, you kind of know what you're getting into, and that's how things are going to happen around here. It's a very powerful cultural thing of just how things are done around here. That's a business principle that goes beyond any core handbook, any tournament pack or whatever. It's just and people become aware of that. But this is just, when does it pay off? Rarely does it pay off. I mean, I have lost. I've played in a tournament where the prize was a whole army, and I lost that to somebody on table three. Did they set up? They could not have engineered it to where they were playing on table three and end up lapping us on table one and two. You know, that's just the way it works out. And it worked out really great for them. But, you know, they weren't necessarily submarining. That's just the way we were all playing.
Yeah, and that's a perfect segue into what probably the next level of this was. Technically, what this gentleman did while against the code of contact was not against the format of the event. And so we need to look at if we find this unacceptable, and it sounds like we as a community have decided we do, especially the TO of that event also obviously found this
definitely feels greasy and would be something that...
Yeah, you know, yeah. That's a great way of describing it. It's just like you just feel a bit off about it, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And if someone wins of that way, you don't know what may sabotage your future attendance because of that kind of stuff. So the code of contact is, I mean, I think that's it's a real thing. So when there were, you know, just a handful of people in a community playing in a tournament, you would establish what those bounds are. But now with tons of folks playing in tournaments, you know, and so that's
quality problems we're having right now.
Call an extension, you know, of that is, and a desire to more formalize, to make this competition mean something past that plastic trophy or that Land Raider or whatever we took home as a prize. We want it to mean something more.
Yeah, you want it to stand for not the person who was able to manipulate their score better, it was the person who was the best player on the day.
Absolutely. But let's take a break, because I want to get a word from our sponsors, then we can come back and chat about this. It's not to, you know, before we've been going on for about it, but there's people might want a moment of respite. See you on a second.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com, and don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
And we are back. I hope everyone has had their long rest. They got their spell slots back. Still got everybody
it's
here.
It's a thick episode, guys. It's got some heft to it.
so we talked a little bit about potentially, like, if we don't want this to happen, then, you know, the construct of the event may have to change.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's in a lot of cases where we see, okay, that was not intended. That's something, and we see it with the game, right? We see it where FAQs come out, erratas and such to modify the mechanics of the game. In the same vein, I think that we find ourselves really where it is in our best interest to modify the format, because sometimes, and you know, there's different, the ETC has said, hey, we don't think that certain aspects of the format is correct or not, or incorrect or what have you. And I think that that's important, because you look at, okay, well, Adam, this is a great question. Where in the 40K rulebook does it say how to run an event and how that event should be done? Win path. What's the 40K standard of win path?
It really doesn't. I mean, you can go off the events that are being running. Well, there's an event being run this weekend. Our good TPM might plug later. But apart from that, they really haven't ruled about how things should be done or how events should be constructed. They've eventually left that up to interpretation or left that up to whatever we find works for us.
Yes. And I think that's huge. I personally think that that's a very big deal, because that means that we're really deciding our own win path methodology along the way. And that really gives us the agency to change or adapt the system. And I think that there are some good suggestions out there on how to go about that, as far as, you know, considering maybe battle points and that mechanism is not as good as we think it is in regards of managing the, a tournament event in such a way. And maybe we need to consider differentials and margins of victory and how that goes. Because, yes, you could still use battle points, but then look at the differential between those and how does that play out into an event and how does that help determine skill. And so that's one thing, right? That's I think that that's more event specific, but I still think that as our player base goes and we talk about really like a lot of the driving motivations for these cases for these different players and how they go about it, we could even take it in the next step further and talk about how we look at it from a almost a strategic perspective, which I would consider the ITC rankings, right? And how we go about that. Okay, so I've already proposed differentials, margin of victory for events, but then player rankings and ITC points, if you are suddenly considering that, okay, you know, so take like, for example, Tanya, you mentioned playing against new players. If there was something of an ELO concept introduced or used, let's say it was already introduced maybe, and then if we implemented it to such an extent that, okay, if you play against someone that is newer or not even an extended track record or something, like your essentially your gains in the strategic environment would not be as worthwhile one way or the other, and so you're doing yourself damage to certain extents by engaging persistently there. And that there's give and take there, right? Like there's absolutely an argument to be had in some of those other considerations of the environment. But I still think that there are things that we consider. We don't just have to throw our hands up and say, oh, well, that's the game we play. Because it's just not. It is not something that we have to just sit back and endure if we're not satisfied with it.
Yeah, and there's 100% pros and cons to all of these different format changes. Like, so the one you just suggested, the one where we take battle points into consideration, the counterpoint to that. And so, like I said, there are pros and cons to pretty much every tournament format you can find. And it's just about being open enough as a community to find the one we think works best for us, not just accepting the one we have. Because I think that's the last thing we want, just accepting the status quo and just always getting what we've always got. But so the counterpoint to the battle point system is that it rewards the player who puts the other guy in the ground, who puts the other player in the ground. It rewards the person who stomps hardest, stomps fastest. And if I was to play, say, Paul plays Tanya and Tanya just dunks on Paul and beats him by 80 points because she has like an overwhelming list advantage or goes first with you know, let's say, you know, Admech on a bowling ball game. Get some
of those orcs.
Yeah. And I play against Red. And me and Red have like the game from like heaven. It was just incredibly tactical, deep, back and forth, like, you know, switch and, you know, all this stuff. And we have a 5-point game, but Tanya scored 100 and she continues to score hundreds because she, let's say she just goes first a couple of times, or she's just on the right list at the right time and it's ultra powerful. And Red and I just struggle all the way through the event, but end up with the same 5-0 as Tanya does. But Tanya's got, you know, 100 more battle points. It doesn't really reward how hard the games were. It doesn't take into effect how hard the games were. That's why I really like the strength of schedule concept. The concept being that the strength of the players you played against is taken into account with your standing in addition. And so I think ELO is the premium best way we can do this always. ELO is just such a great system. And I don't know why it hasn't been adopted wholesale. But battle points, strength of schedule, and ELO together, I think, gets as close to about as perfect as I think we can get. And I'm probably wrong. I'm not an expert on this. There's just been my experience and the experience of having access to awesome brained people like Joshua Diffie and people of his ilk.
There's a lot of discussion of this. It's like, man, why would a tournament organizer even bother to run events when there's all this? When there is, someone's always going to find a little bit of fault in whatever they do.
Sure.
Everybody, thank you, local TO. If you go to a tournament. Yeah. Just realize, you know, they're essentially, so you think about, you go to the movies, yeah? You go to the cinema and you watch one movie that you really enjoyed. You go to a tournament, you go to a 40K event and you can watch 3, 4, 5, 6, 9 movies that you really enjoyed. And that TO is the executive producer, director, editor, all that stuff. They are literally, they make the film for you, for you to enjoy.
With no exaggeration.
Zero exaggeration. None at all.
85, 90% of every tournament organizer throughout the globe that I've ever encountered is doing it because they want to make a fun event for the players that show up.
Right.
I mean, just that's it. Solid 90 90%+ of the people that I know that are running tournaments want to just put on an entertaining weekend or day for the people that show up.
Spot on.
So we should not discourage them from doing it because it is an entertaining day or a weekend for us to show up and do. What we're talking about is the I don't want to say the fringe, but you know, we're talking about like pushing us towards, I don't know, whatever we perceive that next level is. How do we make a more perfect system?
And I want to coin this discussion. This isn't a discussion of right or wrong. I feel like this is a growing pain discussion. We're in a position of growth where we're trying to go to a new level of what we find acceptable and unacceptable. And I think it's a great place to be. As much as people want to possibly have consternations or be disparaging towards whatever has happened here, I think overall this will be a good thing for the community.
Oh, that whole necessity is the mother of invention. I mean, that's a true adage.
Yep.
You know, and look, and we're talking about things that really, depending on where you're playing or what you're doing, might not even be a problem. I mean, I don't want to say it's a problem. We're just discussing if this is your problem, then there are tools to, there are ways to maybe think about doing something about it. And you're in the nature of the system, you are empowered to do so as an organizer or talk with your community about, do you want to limit the ability to do this or not?
Love it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's been a great discussion, a very healthy discussion.
Absolutely.
And we managed to do it and give, I shouldn't say this. So we managed to do it and give zero love to the two new codexes that came out this week. Well, they'll hate us. Don't remind them that we... All the T-Sons players and the Grey Knight players get their pitchforks out. Rabble, rabble, rabble.
If I can, I want to say that I put something in practice that I yammered on about a couple of weeks ago.
Mm.
So I think it's important to mention.
Spill the beans. What'd you do?
Okay, so I mentioned that I've had these two character models, two figures on my desk, painting desk, for a long, long time because I knew it would only take me 4 or 5 hours to get them done. And so they just sat there and never got done because they were always just one painting session away. Well, I'm happy to report they are done. Sly Marbo and the Catechin Colonel, you know, the guy with the power fist pointing, have been painted. They are done, based. Have not been sealed yet, but will be done. I got one more coat of paint to put on Sly Marbo's shirt.
Dude.
Because it looks good the way it is, and I actually thought it was done, but no, I really want to bring it up one more color.
Well done, man. I should always be congratulated when the pile of shame diminishes.
That's it. But they've been sitting there. I don't want to say that they have been mocking me or taunting me or whatever, but it is. It's like it's easy for us to put it off. Oh, it'll wait till tomorrow. And those days just stack up. And so you don't get it. You don't get it done. And you know, I'm like, you know what? Got to practice what we preach. Got to get in there and do it. And enjoy the paint. And they have similar colors on both miniatures. So you can kind of keep, you know, you work within a certain grouping of paint pots and you can work pretty efficiently and get these things done. And I'm happy with them. And all their chunky highlights. I'm a chunky highlighter.
I am also a chunky highlighter, actually. It's part of my style.
I'd like to say it's become my style because there's not getting any better. That's...
Embrace it.
Not going to be any less chunky, but they're done. I put some pictures up on Instagram at Fights with Dice and on Twitter at Warmaster_TPM. If you're curious.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, I think they turned out pretty well. I'm happy with them. And that figure, I hope that Catechin Colonel comes out in wide release at some point because it's a cool model.
Absolutely. It's, I know a lot of people who are just not annoyed that they didn't get one, just wanted one so much.
Oh, no, it's easy. Yeah.
So much.
The FOMO is real. And
yeah.
But it's these character models are really cool. Even with Sly, you know, I looked at him like, man, do I really want to paint the eyes? I did.
Yes.
I went in and I painted the eyes.
Oh, that's nuts. I don't do that.
Yeah,
paint. So I have a question.
Yeah.
Do you paint the eyes before or after?
Ooh.
I get to a certain part of the face done. Like I'll base coat the face. And before I get to that final highlight on the face, that's when I paint the eyes because I can go in and color, like correct inevitably when I make them just
janky.
just googly eyed.
Yeah, that's
like
how
I was doing
it
comically on purpose. That's how bad they can be. And then I go back and clean it up some. And you know, from 3 feet away, the eyes ain't bad.
Nice.
Yeah, the eyes ain't bad. Real happy with it. So, you know, that's it. You got some figures that are there. You know you can do it in 4 or 5 hours. Go ahead and do it. Nothing stopping you, but you know whatever reason you've created that day to do it. Which I know the reason. That's why I didn't say excuse. Reason. you know, yeah, we could find reasons, but let's just get it done. And then keep each other accountable. That's one of the reasons I post on the social media stuff, is just to kind of almost like set these kind of chains of accountability up along the way. And one of my buddies, this is a bit of an aside, not exactly what I want to talk about. He's been assembling all these miniatures. And he said, he's like, I don't know where to start. I'm afraid I'm going to mess up. Afraid he's going to mess up the painting. You're never going to get any better unless you do it. You can look at tutorials, you can get a good idea, you can, but really you've got to ultimately get comfortable with how the paints and your brushes work. Whichever paints or brushes you're trying to use, you got to get comfortable with it, and you can't do that without just doing it.
I actually think that if you feel like you're scared of messing up your models, one, stop watching the tutorials, because they could be adding to the intimidation factor. And two, I think that sometimes there's a great power in taking your air quotes mistakes and just incorporating those into your style so that it becomes something that is more intentional in your painting. And I think that makes it a more positive experience altogether. And then maybe as you go along painting, you might decide to keep those air quote mistakes as part of your style, or you might, you know, through just painting models, you might learn how to not do them anymore, and then you can choose, like mindfully choose, to get rid of them as they don't suit you anymore.
My actual advice to them is like, yo, they're your models, you're not messing anything up, just, you know, don't compare it to the next folks' models, you know, just paint what you can. But I really think you block in the colors, you know, take your time, do a solid base coat. And what when, especially when we're painting a boot, I'm probably going to get some paint on the pants, you know, whatever, but then I touch it up. I mean, there's a long series of touch ups on models, and that you may never get past that. You may never be able to paint whatever the pouch exactly right the first time without touch. Don't worry about that. It's more important that you just get a painted bottle and get it on the table and ultimately be happy with it.
And honestly, like 9 times out of 10, if your colors are striking, people won't notice your mistakes.
Oh, fair point.
Pro tip.
Yeah. Just
I gotta try it. That one.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, go bold.
Go bold.
Yeah, and just do it. That's the hobby segment. More to come on that. Tanya, we're going to be doing. So you had some ideas for finishing moves.
Yeah, you want me to do it now?
Oh no. Well, we got to tune in for next week. Got to have some kind of teaser.
Teaser for next week. All right.
Yeah, finishing moves. But this weekend, depending on when the show goes up, I may be doing some live streaming from the Games Workshop or Orlando Warhammer 40,000 open tournament.
Amazing.
On Warhammer TV.
Kind of a big deal.
I'm pumped. I can't wait. Can't wait to talk about games. Can't wait to see the games. Can't wait to interact with folks in the chat. Going to try to be exciting, entertaining. You never know what's going to happen in a live show, so you might as well tune in and watch.
I'm going to watch.
Awesome. That's what I wanted to mention, that. Hopefully the show goes up in time.
Pressure's on, Paul.
If you missed it. Or the show came out late, then go and see if it's on their Twitch. Would really love the support and seeing everybody tune in. So that's been a heavy show this week.
Heavy.
Yeah, and I don't know if we solved any problems, but I really want to, like, we can, if there's any takeaways, I think just empowering people to create the kind of events that they want to play in, that their groups want to play in. And you'll probably find an audience for it, no matter what it is.
I'm just happy. Hopefully, we've raised some awareness about some of the places and things people might want to go in with the community in the future. Everyone, just take a minute, think about how you feel about this. Just make up your own mind, and together we can just forge wherever we want to be from here on out.
Oh man, I like how you worded in a little bit of branding in there.
Yeah, I know. It's good. A forge pun. We don't do enough.
No. Speaking of which, if you like what you've heard or want to contribute to the conversations, please consider liking, sharing, and subscribing and telling folks about us. If you leave us a 5-star review, which by the way, someone left interaction with us in the reviews, and I'm going to read that out next thing. They left a 5-star review, which is awesome, and then mentioned some things that they thought we did not cover or could have covered in the episode. So it was like the perfect thing. Great 5-star showing that support and interacting with us. And so if that's your method of doing it, then do it. You can also hit us up on any of the comments or emails or whatever off the website or on social media. We love to hear it. Thank you all for doing it. We'll see y'all next week.
See ya.
See yous.
Thank you, TOs. We'll be right back.
said, but I already subscribed. You better do it too.